When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast. I am your host, James Coker, along with Luke Francis. Hi, Luke.
Hi, James.
Today, we are going to be previewing the Formula One MSC Cruises United States Grand Prix 2025, which is happening in Austin, Texas, at the Circuit of the Americas, aka COTA. Before we get into that, we have some Formula One headlines to talk about, don't we?
We do, yeah. A few headlines since the last race. Nothing sort of huge, no big driver transfers, but a few bits of news or developments in the F1 world that I think everyone should know about.
First up, there was a court case happening in the UK between McLaren Racing and Alex Palou. It tangentially has to do with F1, not directly has to do with F1, but mainly has to do with Alex Palou's contract to join Arrow McLaren in IndyCar, which he then walked back on and decided to stay with Chip Ganassi Racing. Essentially, McLaren is claiming that there were a number of sponsors lined up and investments that were lined up that were tied to Alex Palou joining the IndyCar team. Alex Palou was then experiencing a lot of success with Chip Ganassi Racing. I think he got cold feet. He didn't want to leave what was essentially a good situation at CGR and decided to go back on his contract. And McLaren, in turn, decided to sue him.
Yeah, there's a few elements at play here. I mean, as always with court cases, they can be quite complicated with a lot of different perspectives and different sort of views on what the situation was. But essentially, as you say, McLaren are claiming $20 million, essentially, because Alex Palou reneged on his offer and his agreement. Essentially, Palou, the reason for that, he felt he was sort of missold a dream, I guess, by Zak Brown. Obviously, the agreement came for the IndyCar seat and the drive, but there were also certain sort of Formula One opportunities, whether that be reserve driver slots, practice appearances, and then this is what's sort of up for debate, the possible race seat at McLaren. And so this was all in... McLaren claim it's not in contract. It wasn't agreed. Zak Brown terms it as optionality in the contract, which I just see as a bit of a grey area, you know, not really understanding specifically what the sort of agreement was. But essentially, the moment Oscar Piastri was signed for McLaren, it confirmed to Palou that he wouldn't get that race seat. And that definitely wasn't an opportunity anymore. And so Alex then basically, yeah, combined with his success the previous season with Chip Ganassi, it was sort of a combination of thoughts, and he pulled out of that deal. And essentially, McLaren are trying to sue him for $20 million to basically cover any costs, as you say, sponsors lined up, or also you know, legal fees to have to fill in the gap of who they would hire after that, all of the sort of costs that go into bringing a new driver in, negotiations, all of that they see as $20 million as a total. And so it's still in process. One of the elements that Pelot came out with, which possibly could change how the court case is seen, but in that McLaren deal for IndyCar, it's claimed, or Pelot claimed, that he was actually going to be paid less than he was with Chip Ganassi. And so I think for him, the wider F1 opportunities sort of meant the lower salary was okay for him because he was getting an opportunity in Formula One. But that opportunity then went when Piastri was signed. So there's these elements going around. We're due to get a statement by McLaren in the coming days, I believe, in terms of this case. So developments are coming, but it's certainly a busy time for Zak Brown, having just come off the back of a world championship.
It's also the last thing that McLaren probably wants, given the, for lack of a better term, drama that's going on between their two drivers right now. There are accusations that McLaren is maybe showing some sense of favoritism towards Lando Norris, given his relationship with Zak Brown, also given the relationship that he's been at McLaren much longer than Oscar Piastri. Some people feel like they're trying to tip the scales in Lando's favor so that he can win the World Drivers' Championship, even though Oscar's currently in the lead. There were some accusations that came out from Pelot in the court case. I believe he was essentially implying that Zak Brown never wanted to sign Oscar Piastri, and that it was Andrea Seidel's choice to sign for the team at the time. And this is like the kind of, whether this is true or not, this is the last thing you want coming out when you're trying to handle the, for lack of a better term, egos of two like young, talented drivers.
Yeah, 100%. And for me, it's the timing. I don't quite understand. I know this has been going on for a few months now, and this happened quite a while ago. But to dive into this, because McLaren are the ones instigating this, right? They're trying to get $20 million from Pelot. So they're not the ones being sued. I'm surprised that they're deciding to go so hard at this now. I don't know why they didn't wait until December or January, where the new season's starting, or when there's less on the line, as you say, with their current drivers in delivering. I know they delivered the Constructors' Championship, but delivering a fair and respectable Drivers' Championship, it leaves a bad taste and definitely puts McLaren in a negative light, whichever way you stand on the court case. I think being involved in legal battles is never a good look from either side. And so it's an interesting one, but you know, it may came out that Pelot essentially, you know, got the right end of the stick with the contract, and McLaren actually weren't in the wrong at all. So we'll see what the ending, the sort of final findings are. But yeah, not quite the publicity McLaren wanted right now.
What I find so interesting about this lawsuit is that if it were the inverse, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We see teams walk back on their contracts all the time, because they are able to word the contracts and put in clauses that give them loopholes to be able to release themselves of any responsibility and liability. So we often see drivers in Formula One and in IndyCar sign a contract with a team for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. And for whatever reason, the team decides to cancel the contract, void the contract, do a buyout. They're able to get away with it. But the second a driver wants to walk away from a contract, we have a lawsuit.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And, you know, we saw it again, a sort of knock-on effect with this situation is when Piastri came out with that infamous tweet against Alpine. Yep. And Alpine, you know, launched legal proceedings. So I do think, I guess it's maybe a point where the teams, the companies have enough money to essentially just, I guess, you know, flood these drivers of negative press, lawyer fees, to the point where the driver just gives in, whereas the driver can't necessarily bankroll a full legal attack on a team because the team is naturally just has a lot more cash in the bank. So I think there's an element of that, the sort of power struggle that a driver would have in launching those investigations. Because as you say, we see all the time drivers being dropped early. And yeah, whenever it's a driver leaving, the team is the one that launches proceedings. So yeah, I think it's a mix. The team just feel like they have the budget to go at drivers with it, whether it's right or wrong.
I don't think Alex Palou has any regrets right now. He is now a four-time IndyCar Series champion. He is an Indy 500 winner. He is now immortal in the world of motorsport, winning the Indy 500. If he continues going down this road, he's going to be considered one of the greatest drivers in IndyCar history, up with Scott Dixon and AJ Foyt. I'm not trying to say anything bad about McLaren here, but it seems like Alex Palou made the right decision in staying with Chip Ganassi Racing. It was a good situation. He realized they had a good car, a good team. It made sense for him to stay there, and he just had an incredibly dominant season. I think he won 8 races, had over 10 podiums, won the NTT IndyCar Series championship by like hundreds of points. Pato O'Ward, I believe, finished second, but it was a very distant second. So, I mean, I'm sure he doesn't like having to go to court and deal with these legal proceedings, but I think he does not regret his decision to stay at CGR.
Yeah, I think you can tell. I mean, as you say, the success he's had, I don't think anyone would regret that sort of chain of events. But what it looked like to me was he had the sort of opportunity of Formula One in his hands, or at least a step towards it. And he was, I guess, very sort of romanticized, if that's the right word, into getting into Formula One and having tests, being with McLaren. There's that sort of, romantic element to F1 where it's like, this is the pinnacle for me. But I think he realized the politics around the sport, obviously, can be very fractious. And essentially, he sort of saw what was important to him and what he was happy doing. And as you said, the success has spoken for itself. And who knows what's coming up in the future, He may make a move over again once teams realize how good he is. And especially with Cadillac now, I think the general footprint of Formula One in America will grow massively with that team. So, never say never. But hats off to the guy for how he's reacted professionally and on the track to this situation.
For sure. Next up, there are some rumors and concerns regarding Charles Leclerc's future at Ferrari.
Yeah, this is fairly preliminary rumors. It's nothing confirmed. Just a few interviews he's made recently, essentially voicing his concerns for Ferrari. I know we've spoken a lot on this podcast about Ferrari and their struggles in recent races. It's another season that's been underwhelming. And essentially, Leclerc has essentially come out saying the rest of 2025 won't be anything special. It could be Ferrari's first winless season under Fred Vasseur. I think it probably will be, based on the facts, as we said last episode, the cars won't be developing much. And so Ferrari most likely will finish in that sort of, P5 to P8 range, depending on who, how the races end. But I think his main concerns are for 26. He said, we hope to start 2026 on the front foot. And essentially, if they don't, it will then be a tough couple of years to get back into sort of a race winning position. Obviously, with a new reg cycle, there's a lot of, as we saw with the start in 22, once a team is quite dominant, it's very hard to sort of win that development war. It takes a good few years. And so with the likes of Mercedes, Ferrari, McLaren, it took them a good 2-3 years to get back to Red Bull's standing and sort of win races again. So I think for Ferrari, it's just concerns for Leclerc and possibly looking at other teams depending on the 2026 performance. But I think, as we can all agree, it's definitely not the season Ferrari wanted. But then there's the discussion, which I had with some colleagues, about whether Leclerc possibly deserves to be in a better car based on his performance. The past two races, Hamilton has arguably been neck and neck with him. Sainz, when they were teammates, was winning some races over Leclerc, finished above the standings. I think in two seasons they were teammates. So there's two sides to it. But concerns from Leclerc are possibly a discussion as to whether he deserves to be.
That's so interesting because up until this point, for the most part, Leclerc has had the same position the entire time. And that is I want to be at Ferrari. It is my dream to win a championship with Ferrari. I'm here. I'm committed. Nothing's going to change that. And this is the first time we're starting to see some doubts. And I'm sure partially it comes to the fact that, like, he is now 27 years old. You know, of course you have people like Lewis Hamilton and Alonso who are racing in Formula One still in their 40s. But for the most part, like, you, late 20s, early 30s is like the prime for a Formula One driver. So he's probably thinking big picture. I need to make sure that I'm setting myself up for success to have the best possible chance to win a World Drivers Championship. And now he's starting to doubt that that's possible with Ferrari.
Definitely, definitely. And I think Hamilton sort of echoed those same concerns, sort of saying progress or gradual progress, I think it was, isn't good enough. As we've seen with Ferrari, they've not gone forward this year compared to the start of the reg cycle. You know, if you cast your minds back to 2022 at the start, they were arguably in a championship fight for the first third or maybe half of a season. So they have gone back fundamentally since those times. And you've seen McLaren obviously come through from essentially nowhere. Worst team on the grid at the start of 23, it would have been. And so I think he's essentially very frustrated and doesn't know where to go next. And I think it's a very difficult position right now because, as we say, you know, he'll be at Ferrari next year in 26. If they don't have a good car, it's then another 2 years until he's possibly got something that's worth staying for. But as we know, you know, Ferrari don't necessarily have that in the bank anyway after 2 years. So I think concerns for him. But then on the other side of things, and this is sort of an interesting paradox, Oscar Piastri, as we've spoken on the pod a few times, is maybe a little bit concerned for his standing in the team and where McLaren see him. Mm-hmm. And so he had a interesting interview from Mark Webber, Oscar Piastri's manager, speaking to Italian media, essentially talking about Piastri's career development and saying he's not necessarily where he absolutely can be, as that's fairly natural. He's quite new to the sport still. And one element of his career progression is improving his Italian, which obviously the media grabs and went, he's going to Ferrari. But it's an interesting point, let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting because Ferrari seems to be in a situation that they were in the 90s where they were really struggling. And it wasn't until Schumacher joined after winning back-to-back championships with Benetton when he joined in 96. I believe it took 4 years, right, for them to win another championship. And so maybe Leclerc is like, I don't think I have 4 years. But he's already been there for five. So he's like, do I continue to sort of like hope that things get better here, or do I just like try to insert myself into a winning car now so I have a good chance to win the driver's championship?
Essentially. And I think, I mean, in fairness to him, he's sort of been there already for one of those resurgences. I mean, if you remember back to 2020, Ferrari were barely getting points in a lot of races. Obviously, they had some cheeky perspectives on how to run an engine in Monza, which resulted in a under the table punishment, essentially causing Ferrari to be very down on performance in 2020. And so it was essentially a 4-year project to bring them back. And so it took 2020, 21, 22. And then eventually in 22, they were able to challenge for races again. So I think he feels like he's been through this already.
Yeah.
But they're now back at square one, or not necessarily square one, but
yeah, because they almost won the constructors last year. They only lost the constructors to McLaren by a handful of points. I think it was like 12 points or something like that.
And so it's a tricky one. Yeah, they've had that resurgence period, but it's just not this year. Should have almost been that year, the next step, pushing for a title or at least pushing McLaren, but they've been nowhere near. And so I definitely think this is the first year he's had proper concerns. But his contract runs till 2029. So I don't know if we'll see him break that and then Ferrari launch legal proceedings against him. You never know.
I don't think they will. But let's move on. Let's talk about the FIA presidential candidate race, shall we?
Yeah, so this is another fairly complicated political situation. I would argue it is a situation in Formula One, but specifically the FIA, which is the wider governing body of Formula One, Formula E, and all of the sort of leading motorsport categories. Essentially, it works similar to any democratic vote. So every 4 years, there is a vote to decide a new president of the FIA. The last one was in 2021, and Mohammed Ben Sulayem became president of the FIA, and 4 years later comes to 2025. So we've got a new election this year on the 12th of December to elect a new FIA president. Now, there are three main candidates running against Ben Sulayem. One is Tim Meyer, or Meyer, who is an ex-FIA steward. Ben Sulayem binned him off quite abruptly and sort of quite ceremoniously. Tim Meyer was publicly outspoken in how unfair that situation was. Sort of abuse of power was thrown around in terms of that situation. But he's running as a candidate. Laura Villars, who's an ex-driver, she's also going for candidacy. She's the youngest ever to go for it. She was born in 1997, so considerably younger than any other president. And then Virginie Philipot, I've definitely butchered that, but she's a French motorsport journalist, presenter, lots of experience in motorsport. And so those are the candidates going against Ben Sulayem. But as with most general elections or presidential elections, there is a lot of politics, and it's no different in Formula One and in the FIA. So despite three candidates running against Ben Sulayem, essentially they will have to pull out of the sort of process, and Ben Sulayem will most likely run unchallenged when it comes to a vote to be the next FIA president. And this is due to various complicated regulations and guidelines where essentially to be a candidate, you need to choose vice presidents that are under you in every continent where motorsport is concerned, which is obviously South America, North America, Europe, Asia, et cetera, et cetera. But you need to choose a vice president in every single region. But when it comes to South America, there's only one eligible person that could be a vice president. Don't ask me why, politics, but I think the fundamental reason is it's Bernie Eccleston's wife, who of course has still
a fair amount
of power.
And that person has to agree to run with you? Is that how it works?
Correct, correct. So she is the only person in South America that could be a vice president for the FIA, but she is currently, I guess, wedded or aligned to Ben Sulayem. So no other candidate can choose a different vice president in South America. Ben Sulayem has Eccleston already. And so essentially, no other candidate can qualify, essentially, to run in the ballot for the election. And so it's a very weird and very, in my eyes, wrong situation that will basically give Ben Sulayem another 4 years unchallenged. Doesn't seem like democracy to me, but classic Formula One and FIA.
Feels like he specifically made the rules this way so he could stay in power as long as possible.
It's probably correct. He's definitely not the most straight shooter, probably, when it comes to these issues.
By the way, Virginie Philipot is Belgian, not French, but close.
Close. Yeah. Close.
French still, adjacent.
I still butcher the accent, so whether it was Belgian or French, I would have butchered it.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's talk United States Grand Prix, shall we?
Yep, let's go.
All right, y'all, this week we are going to get to enjoy the Formula One MSC Cruises United States Grand Prix 2025. The U.S. Grand Prix has been at a number of places. Sebring, it was at Watkins Glen for a very long time. It for 1 year, was in Dallas. It was in Phoenix. It was in Long Beach. It's been in a bunch of – it was famously at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We know that one terrible race where only six cars ran at the United States Grand Prix due to tire issues. I believe one brand of tires couldn't take the banking, and it was like a safety hazard. But the United States Grand Prix has been in Austin, Texas, at COTA, at Circuit of the Americas, since 2012. It's going to remain on the calendar as the USGP until 2026. A new contract is expected to be soon. But let's talk about what happened last year. Who was our winner in 2024?
So I know we were just speaking about this driver, and it just shows the change in fortunes for Ferrari. It was a Charles Leclerc win and Sainz second. Sainz, obviously, last season was with Ferrari. So it was a Ferrari 1-2 last year. The sort of period of the season where every single race, you never knew who was going to be on top. Of course, you could understand things like setup and how they'd react with tyres. Obviously, the surface in COTA is a lot harsher than most tracks, so tire wear is a lot higher. So you have an idea, but it was that weird period where we'd go into every race weekend and we wouldn't know really what the standing was, who was looking good. And right. So this race, it was a Ferrari 1-2. Not expecting the same this year, but I'd hope so. I mean, we need Lewis back on the podium, firstly.
I agree. Yeah. Let's talk about some previous bangers at COTA for the US Grand Prix.
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. I wouldn't say there's been many memorable races as an actual competitive race. You know, you look at other tracks like Brazil and, you know, Interlagos that conjure up these infamous races where it's chaos and it's strategy and it's everything like that. I find COTA doesn't really deliver that, but it does deliver some moments. And so back in 2015, there was a very rare race weekend for COTA where it rained so badly on the Saturday that quali had to be moved to the Sunday. Of course, COTA is essentially in a desert, pretty much. And so when it rains, it pours heavily. And so they had to essentially move qualifying to the Sunday. That was the same day that Hamilton won his third Formula One title with Mercedes beating out Rosberg in their second season together as teammates, teeing up the infamous 2016 season, the very sort of fractious season that we saw with those two. And then my favorite was Kimi Raikkonen returning to the top step of the podium for the first time since 2013, delivering the most infamous radio message. My favorite, fucking finally.
I feel like if Fernando Alonso wins another race in his Formula One career, we're going to get a similar radio message.
We're going to get what was he saying about Hadjar last race again?
Trophy for the hero of the race.
Trophy for the hero of the race, and it's me this time.
Most driver wins at the USGP at COTA is Lewis Hamilton with 5. Most team wins is Mercedes with 6. Fun fact, COTA was a $400 million purpose-built track that was built to revive the American Formula One audience. And look at it now. It gets a huge turnout every year.
It's incredible. I think, as you said about in the Indianapolis, they left Indianapolis, I want to say in 07 was the last race, following the disaster that was the 2005 race. It basically ruined American audiences' trust in Formula One. Essentially, Formula One was laughed out the door after what happened in Indianapolis. And so it took a lot of years to bring back the American race. And so in 2012 was the first race at COTA. Essentially, Formula One knew they had to build a track that was purely for Formula One. It's one of the most roller coaster tracks, I would argue, on the calendar. I know MotoGP race there and they name it the roller coaster. Lots of undulation around the track, stars and stripes all over. But the thing for me that is so interesting with COTA was it's the first purpose-built track where we've seen Formula One deliver a wider sort of entertainment value. Obviously, there's Grand Prix and everyone goes to a Grand Prix to watch the race, sitting in the grandstand, seeing the cars on track. But COTA built a purpose-built concert venue, essentially, within the track to deliver music events during a race weekend to broaden the perspective of the entertainment offering for fans. And so it essentially brought in more fringe fans, less people that were obsessed with the racing and more that would maybe go to a race to see Post Malone perform after. So it was the start of the sort of Liberty era of what a Formula One race event is. Yeah. And so it was an interesting case study of a $400 million project, essentially paving the way for how we see Formula One as a total product.
I'm excited to go. It'll be my first time this week. You and I will both be there. So should be a good time.
Yeah, it's always great in Austin. And to be so close to Austin, I mean, it's an amazing city. One of my favorites. I know all my colleagues feel the same. It's one that you simply can't miss when it comes to going to any race in the F1 season. So yeah, can't wait.
I'm very excited to see that in real life, the elevation change between on turn one, that the steep incline looks very cool.
Yeah, it's quite something. The biggest elevation change in the F1 calendar, not in terms of gradient. So Eau Rouge is steeper, but turn one of COTA is higher in terms of meters. So it's 41 meters elevation change from the start finish line to turn one, whereas with Eau Rouge it's slightly lower, but it's much steeper as a climb. Just to clarify those points, but yes, it's a special track. I don't know if you've seen, James, the video of Charles Leclerc in I think 23 doing the sunset practice session.
Yeah. It's gorgeous.
I mean, beautiful.
Yeah,
one of my favorite clips of an F1 car on a track. I think they called it it was something like Journey to the Sun, because you see the camera behind and he's sailing off basically directly into the sun, and it's setting and it's sky's orange. Oh, it's beautiful. So it's gorgeous. We'll get it again with sprint races. We'll get it again.
Hope so. Track facts. The track is 5.513 kilometers long, with a 308.4 kilometer race distance. The Grand Prix will be 56 laps, 20 turns, with two DRS zones. That's between turn 11 and turn 12, as well as between turn 20 and turn 1, start-finish straight. The race lap record is 1 minute 36.169 seconds, set by Charles Leclerc in 2019. The all-time lap record is 1 minute 32.029 seconds, set by Lewis Hamilton in 2019 as well. Now let's talk about some of the talking points going into this race, because we still have, even though McLaren was able to secure the constructors' title in Singapore, we still have a very, very close race for the drivers' championship, and potentially could be a three-way battle for the drivers' championship, and in a crazy scenario, could be a four-way battle.
Is the tinfoil hat coming back?
Yeah.
No, it's I honestly, I think we saw a few races ago that everyone was calling the championship dead and Piastri was going to win. I think it was after Lando's engine failure. I think it's fully back on, to be honest. Yep. I mean, it's 22 points is the difference, which is enough for a race win to completely swing the championship. You know, if Oscar has an engine failure or crashes out and Lando wins, it's 3 points in Lando's favor. So it's definitely back on. And I think for me, what's fundamentally interesting, if the momentum was in Oscar's favor, then I would probably say it's not really much of a championship fight to get excited about. But the past two races, the momentum has shifted for me. Obviously, Oscar had probably the worst race of his career in Baku. Completely uncharacteristic weekend where he was crashing all the time, frustrated. It was just one of those that he wants to walk away from and never remember again. Mm-hmm. And then in Singapore, we saw a different type of race, but another one that was definitely underwhelming for him and very frustrating. So two very tough races on the sort of, you know, one and one after the other. And so I think for him, he needs to get something back over Lando, or he will just keep falling into this bad cycle where Lando will keep getting more momentum, we'll see small point swings over the next few races. And then you never know, in three races time, we'll have a, you know, gap of less than 10 points and then it's fully open, the championship. Yeah. So I think this weekend will be a huge one, purely just to see how Oscar handles the pressure. He may finish fourth behind Lando or fifth behind Lando or whatever he does. But I think for me, I want to see that he's calm and he's able to actually, deliver a race weekend, not get frustrated, be calm on the radio and prove that he is still there and able to sort of, mentally be against, you know, the likes of Lando and Max. I think that's his biggest challenge for me. And then beyond that is, I know we spoke last time, but with McLaren having won the constructors already, is it going to change? Are Papaya rules going to be more relaxed, be more strict? Are they going to be able to race as much as they like? Will they be told to essentially hold positions? That's all something that we're going to see, and it's going to be fascinating.
I mean, now that they've won the constructors title, team orders at this point seem moot. Like, what's the point of team orders if you already have the constructors title secured?
I think for the drivers, that's definitely their perspective, which is why I'm so excited. I think the team wants it to be civil and happy so that they can go into next year with two drivers that aren't trying to kill each other. Sure. But for the drivers, 100%. They're going to go, why do I need to settle for P2? We've already won the title. So I do think we'll start to see this shift in how drivers approach it. Obviously, Oscar got frustrated last race, arguably unfairly treated. So he's going to want to basically say, I'm not getting pushed around anymore. You know, if there's a situation where I feel hard done by, I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to let Lando through if he has a bad pit stop. I'm here to win. So it's going to be fascinating. I just hope that the McLarens are firstly quite level in terms of Oscar v. Lando, so we get to see that wheel to wheel, but also in terms of their performance, hopefully going for a race win. I mean, imagine both drivers pushing for a race win. There's no giving in on the radio. There's bad, you know, little radio messages back and forth. All the stuff that we want to see from an entertainment perspective that we've been starved of this season because of the papaya rules. I hope we see it.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm interested to see what's going to happen here. And I think it's also interesting because Oscar having the 22-point lead, let's say Lando and Oscar are battling on a turn, battling for position. Oscar can just stay on his line. He doesn't have to give anything to Lando, because if Lando decides that he's not going to give any space or surrender to Oscar holding the line. They both get taken out, and Oscar remains in the lead for the championship. So at this point, as long as like he doesn't, you know, lock up or make any mistakes, like he's holding all the cards.
Definitely. And what I love about this is which we've not seen for so long, apart from 2021, is this mathematic battle of points. You know, we usually see a driver sail away to a title and win it with several races to go, and there's never any sort of competition in that sense. But Here we're starting to see, how the maths behind the points affects the decision making of the drivers, whether they decide to be a bit more ballsy with racing against their teammates, whether they decide to, I don't know, hold up another driver in qualifying, whatever it is, it's all happening at once, and we're going to start to see it play out right in front of our eyes over the next few races. And I really hope, and this is purely from a entertainment perspective and championship perspective, I really hope we see Lando start to close that gap more. I think it's this sort of turning point where it could, you know, Lando could finish fifth, Oscar could win, and then we're back at square one where championship is basically done. So it's really at that moment where it could either make it a proper championship fight or it'll just finish it quite quickly. So I hope it's the first.
Yeah, for sure. Let's also talk about how there are still some seats up on the up for grabs in the 2026 grid. We don't have all seats on the F1 grid confirmed. Mainly, it seems to be in the V-carb Red Bull world. We know that we essentially know that there's like three seats available and like four or five drivers in play, and we're not sure exactly who's going to end up where, right?
Yeah, correct. Essentially, the last bit of silly season, classic Red Bull, they leave it to the end of the season to put the pressure on their drivers to perform and see who cracks and who excels with that pressure. But yeah, essentially, we're seeing Yuki, Hadjar and Lawson essentially all fighting for those three seats. And it's not one of those cases where one of them is fighting for the top seat. I think they're almost all fighting for any of those seats. I would put Hadjar out in front of those three, in terms of the most likely to retain a seat. And in that situation, it would logically be the Red Bull seat that he would get in that sort of head to head. But we do have another driver who's not competing currently in Formula One called Arvin Lindblad, who is essentially one of the most exciting drivers we've seen recently coming through the junior ranks, not performing massively well in F2 at the moment. But I think as we saw with Kimi and Behm, and that's not always a deciding factor on how good that driver is. But word is Lindblad is a serious talent. And I know that RB are very interested in getting him, RB in terms of Racing Bulls, are very interested in getting him into a race seat and seeing what he can do. So I know we had this conversation a few weeks ago maybe, and I was saying that Yuki would hold position in the V-carb team if Hadjar gets a promotion, but you have swayed me. You have swayed me. And I do think, Lindblad and Lawson seem logical. Yuki's had his chance. As you said, I think his position is he's had his chance. He's been at the junior team as well. So let's give some young blood a go.
I could also see if, for whatever reason, Yuki Tsunoda doesn't end up getting one of the seats in the red for either of the Red Bull teams, he becomes a reserve driver for Aston Martin, given the Honda partnership there.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think there'll be opportunities for him. Nevertheless, it's the classic. When he was at V-Carb, he was driving really well and performing, outperforming Sergio Perez at the time and Liam Lawson. So it's the poison chalice of Red Bull that does ruin drivers, and I sincerely hope it doesn't happen to Hadjar as well. I don't want to see that smile going anywhere other than his face. He's such a brilliant personality, and I really don't want to see him struggling.
For sure. I'm going to let you do predictions first, and then I'm going to give mine, because mine are a little different than yours.
Yes, I see. I'm very, very intrigued to hear it. So I've got Leclerc in P5 purely because last year he was obviously won the race and had a very good performance. Ferrari won't be very strong, but I think they'll be up there. Piastri P4, Russell P3, coming off the back of a brilliant Singapore Grand Prix. I think he'll continue that form. Norris P2 and Verstappen P1, purely because I think I can't really predict which team is best. And when I can't predict which team is best, I certainly know which driver is best, and that is Max Verstappen. So I've put him top.
I like it. I also have Max P1, but I'm going to go back from P5 to 4. I'm going to have Isaac Hadjar P5. I think he's going to have another solid performance. Kimi Antonelli P4. Charles Leclerc P3. George Russell P2. Max Verstappen P1. Now, you might notice that there are no McLarens in my top five.
Something is missing.
I'm not wishing this happens. I do not like it when drivers DNF. I do not like it when drivers crash. But given that this is the first time that they've secured, you know, this is the first race after McLaren secured the constructors' title, I would not be surprised if Lando and Oscar take each other out at COTA. Like, I'm not wishing it happens. Like, I don't really care about whether my predictions are right or not. But I feel like tensions are high. Both drivers are going to be feeling the pressure. Both of them are going to feel the pressure to perform on track. And I think both of them are going to be kind of stubborn when it comes to holding position in the race. And I think neither of them are going to be willing to give up their line. And I think they're going to take each other out in the race.
Now, I will firstly preface that I hope if that does happen, they are both fine. And obviously, we don't want to see drivers hurt. But no, I would love to see a big dramatic moment like that in the season. You know, we look back at 2016 Spanish Grand Prix, history is made in those moments. And so it would be exceptional from an entertainment value to see that and see how the championship unfolds from there.
We saw it with Prost and Senna at Suzuka. It happens, you know?
It does. I need to hear from you how. How will they come together? Will they be pole position and third, and one of them jumps down the inside and takes out the leader? Or will they be wheel to wheel through the S's? How do you think it'll happen?
I think they will be 1-2. Like, I could see them qualifying for the Grand Prix 1-2. And I could see it happening turn one. Like, the height, the excitement and the adrenaline of the race start, trying to, whoever finishes P2, trying to edge out the other, and just refusing to give up position and hold their line, and that ending the race.
See, it makes sense in my eyes, because correct me if I'm wrong, but I think at COTA, pole position is on the racing line. And so second place is on the inside. Mm-hmm. But because of the way the track goes at turn one, second place is actually not the worst place to be, because you can put your nose in and sort of get away with it. So if it is 1-2 McLaren for the start, then I could fully see some fireworks.
I'm not wishing this on anyone. I'm not hoping that it happens, but I would not be surprised if it happens. That's all I'm saying.
For sure. And the radio messages after as well, I'm sure will be infamous. All the media asking about papaya rules. It'll be McLaren's very conservative approach to the season up in flames if that happens.
But essentially what will probably happen is, you know, Lando or Oscar is going to put it on pole, and McLaren are going to be 1-2, and they're going to end up getting a 15 to 20 second lead on everybody else. And it's kind of going to be an uneventful race. That's probably what's going to happen. But
where's the tinfoil hat now? Come on. We need it back.
Cool. Anything else you want to talk about?
I'm just excited to see what happens. Good to be back in Texas. And yeah, let's go.
I'm excited to be there. If you see Luke or I around COTA this weekend at the US Grand Prix, please say hello. I'm super pumped. This is only going to be my third Formula One race. I went to Vegas last year. I went to Canada this year. So it'll be my first United States Grand Prix. So I'm excited for that.
Amazing.
We will be back next week giving our review of the USGP. But until then, we hope you have a great week.
Indeed. Howdy, guys.
Bye.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.